The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Hi. Well, thanks for coming. I'm David Snyder. I'm the director of the Business Law Program, and this is Professor Andy Pike, who knows 10 times more about everything than I do. But I'm going to go first, so he can correct me. Are you all 1Ls? Yeah? Okay. So I think these tend to be most valuable, especially since we have a small group of people, we can just mainly do Q&A. But I'm going to start by showing you some stuff that's on the web in case you haven't discovered it yet, which my guess is you haven't because you probably didn't look. So the way the AU website is set up, okay, so this is just the home page for the law school. And if you go to programs, just click on that, and then they list the most important programs towards the top, and they get less important as you go down. So business law program is the first one. And we don't have a really cool website with lots of pictures and stuff yet. I'm hoping to get that this summer. They keep promising me, but anyway, we do actually have a fair amount of useful information up here, even though we don't have much in the way of cool pictures. So mainly we're going to be shopping for pictures this summer. But in the meantime, useful information is up here. So it's set up like most websites are. So you come to a welcome screen that has absolutely nothing of value on it. But nobody ever reads that anyway. So for present purposes, I think y'all are mainly thinking about, well, what course do I take? And just a brief aside, business law program isn't like a major or anything. It's just an umbrella for stuff having to do with business law. It can be courses, events, people, faculty workshops, alumni stuff, all kinds of different stuff. But it does have some useful information, I hope, for y'all. So if you click on curriculum in law and business, and this is carefully set up so y'all can't read it, but on your screens you'll be able to read it, and I hope. And so if you click on curriculum in law and business, you can find the business courses if you click here, where it says please click here for a list of courses. This is where Professor Pike says, David, they know how to use the internet. But what I really wanted to do was not show you that, but I wanted you to see that we have a huge number of courses. And in fact, it's a bit overwhelming. So this is the first page of several pages of courses. And we actually went to, there are over 150 courses in or related to business law. Now, that takes a fairly broad definition. So we include, say, commercial litigation as a business law course, and we include intellectual property, unless it's just like First Amendment stuff, but we include the IP things, or health law if it's having to do with the business aspects of that. We try to include all that because I can't promise that we've got everything, but we try. And the idea is, first of all, that you can go to this resource and find courses in or related to business law. And secondly, I can't even see it. So there's some bolder print up here, and so the idea is we've actually taken a certain amount of trouble to try to organize these into practice areas. These don't necessarily line up with how the law school world is organized, but we have tried to pay attention to how the practice world tends to be organized. So I'm not going to try and take you through all of these unless somebody wants to ask, and then I'll try and go through some of it. But
the idea here is, okay, where are the commercial law courses? What's related to commercial law? Not all of you are going to really have an idea about that, but you might talk to some lawyers who will say things like, oh, you know, you want some commercial law courses, you want some corporate courses, you want some securities courses, and so on. And these are organized this way, so it makes it a little easier for you to browse around and see what's there. You can also think about, oh, this is what I'm interested in, and we've tried to organize it in such a way that you can say, oh, if I'm interested in tax, you can find all the tax courses. If I'm interested in labor and employment, you can find the labor and employment courses all there. At this point in your law school career, you may not have tried to use the online catalog yet, but if you have, you may have found it
utterly incapable of navigation
or something. So the idea is to try and give you something that will work more easily that way. So that's one tool that's there for you. I honestly don't think it's going to be, you're going to need it that much at this point, because I think things, you know, first semester, second year, there's going to be a lot of fairly clear things that you want to do. But you don't necessarily want to organize your whole life around, okay, and there's good advice to say, take the required courses, the basic courses first, they're prerequisites, get them out of the way, figure out what you like, and then you've got them, and then you can move on, if you like them, to the things that may require, say, business associations or basic tax or whatever. So that's one tool that we've tried to give you. The other thing that is up here, still under this curriculum and law and business link, is some advice from professors about what courses to take. So if we were able to get a bunch of people here and give you advice, and if you had all kinds of time, this is what they would say. And the idea is, first of all, we can't get a whole bunch of professors here, and secondly, you don't have the time to listen to all of us saying stuff forever. There are a few things that you can read. So if you want to read something about business law by a clinical professor, you can look at Professor Bennett's piece here, and she's written this out. So you can just read through this, and you can skim it and see whether you think it's helpful. If you don't think it's helpful, you can move on, and you're not sitting around wasting any time. There's one from me. There's one from Professor Efros. Those are both fairly general. There's one from Professor May on antitrust law. And then, so this is the one that I wrote. It's, I think, 3 or 4 pages long, and you can read through it. And the one I did is meant to give you a fair amount of background. But keep in mind, these are just my views. Not all of us all agree with each other. And we try not to. That would be really boring. And so, you know, you can surf around and see what different people think. And you know, in here, I try to give you some background and try to answer questions that I've gotten a lot over the years, questions that you may have. So that's there for you to use however you see fit. The way I've tried to set it out is there's a bunch of stuff that I think you probably need to know that you're not necessarily going to know. You're not born knowing that commercial law is not the same thing as corporate law. And this tries to explain the difference and talk about different sorts of things. I try to explain what some of the courses are about, not all of them, but some of the basic ones, what the different areas are about, what I think you should take depending on what you're interested in, and I try to do some prioritizing. So after I give you the background, I give you these lists where, in my view, courses you really should take, and that's just 3 courses actually in business law, BA, Federal Personal Income Tax and Secure Transactions. I think everybody should take that, whether they're a business lawyer, litigator, criminal lawyer. Your mother should take these courses. Your grandmother should take these courses. If they don't take these courses, they're going to be missing out on basic stuff. If you're interested in business law, then you probably want to take this next group of courses too. There are 9 of those. But you know, there's some reality here. You may not be able to take all 9. So you're going to have to, you know, do a little prioritizing. I try to give you a little more information on, you know, how I would think about it. I give you stuff on international. I give you various other stuff. I try to deal with some frequently asked questions. But that's all up there, and I have a little bit of general advice. So I think that that's really essentially what I wanted to say by way of introduction. Let me emphasize something I said sort of by the way. I think you all probably know you all need to take business associations. I don't need to go on about that. If you don't know it, you need to take tax. And Professor Pike is a tax professor, and he'll tell you that too. But I want to say, because I'm not a tax professor, and tax is a course you have to take. I'll also tell you, it's not a business law thing, you really need to take evidence too. You know, this is just basic knowledge that you have to have. You won't be able to get things. But especially as a business lawyer, you won't be able to get it unless you take tax. The more surprising thing that I realize most of you are not going to believe, and I didn't believe it, and there are hundreds of students out there right now who didn't believe it, but who now believe, you're actually going to like tax. I know it's surprising, it may be inexplicable, but it's true. It turns out that tax is really, to a large degree, a social policy course. It's not the same as accounting, and it may not be what you think. And it's really fun, and we have the basic tax course is taught by several really talented teachers. So take tax. A certain number of you, I can predict right now, are actually going to fall in love with tax, even though you thought you were going to hate it, and are going to wind up really pursuing it. A lot of you are going to say, oh, you know, tax, that was actually a really cool course. What he said was true, surprisingly enough. So I just wanted to emphasize that. I also think secure transactions is a must-take course. I'm not sure that absolutely everybody agrees on that, and I'm more biased on that one because I do teach that. But I tend to think, just my own view, that that's the course that we have that is as close as it gets in law school to the law of lending. And since we live in a credit economy, you have to understand that. This being law school, there's actually several courses to take on the law of lending. If you were only going to take one, I think that would be the one. Others might choose something different, but that's my view. I give you more on things like corporate finance and so on in here, and I'm happy to take more in the question and answer session. But I'm going to stop there. Professor Pike. I've got you stuck in my diet. What are you trying to
do? It's nice to see many of you again. As many of you know, this is an awfully weird law school. In one of my other capacities, I speak to other people who really want to do public interest. And I tell them this is a weird law school, so you like it. Because if you want to do public interest at most schools, you'll feel like a pariah, an outsider. Everybody else wants to do transactional business, big firm type work, and you'll be the weirdo. Well, we have, 11 students here to learn about business law. I can guarantee you when you're talking about human rights and international law, there are more than 11 people here. One of my favorite experiences years ago, I was at a general advising session with somebody from the clinic, somebody from the international program, somebody from advocacy, somebody who did intellectual property. There were about 7 other people all talking about what was interesting about their programs. And then I came last. I was a throw-in. I was to deal with the business side of the curriculum. And everybody was a little bit tired, and I just stood up and said, I agree with everything they said. I think there's all sorts of value in all the courses they were talking about. 90% of you talking to the students, when you get out of here, when, not if, when, my mouth to God's ears, you get a job, we'll do what I'm going to talk about and what David's talked about. That is private law, business-oriented subject matters that were in the areas that David talked about. That's true whether you're going to work for a private law firm or the government or very often public interest. That's true whether you do transactional work or litigation. You don't litigate in the abstract. You litigate a matter that somebody wants you to litigate. And as important as the constitutional and human rights stuff is in the way of the world, that's not what most litigation's about. Most litigation is about somebody has a dispute that ultimately is about money. And the money usually arises from some transaction that has a business root. And to be able to understand the litigation parts of it, you have to understand the underlying law. And that's what we're talking to you about. Okay. Now, David and I agree, as if you're going to do business law, you have to learn evidence. You don't have to take it simple. If I'm talking to somebody who knows dead to rights that they're going to do litigation, and they want to do insurance defense work or criminal law, they should take evidence real soon. Because that's going to be foundational to other things they do in traditional litigation stuff. If you're going to do business stuff, you should also take evidence. First, it's one of the few subjects that's guaranteed to be tested on the bar. It's not intuitive. And second, as a lawyer, you should know it. You know, after you graduate law school, somebody in your family might say, let's have a graduation party. And somebody else will say, I've always been curious, what's this nonsense about hearsay? And if you go, I've been curious about too, that too, they're going to be really disappointed in you. But in addition, you need to know some of this stuff about evidence. But I took evidence second semester, third year. That's fine. If you're thinking about being focused on private law, first semester, second year, your courses are limited. You definitely should take criminal procedure because you have to. After that, it's your choice. Now, David mentioned some online resources. I would mention others. You've probably seen or heard about them. There are online evaluation of faculties. They're not as detailed as many of you may have had in your undergraduate experiences because the comments, particularly the nasty ones, are not posted online. But there are numerical values. If somebody has, on the last three questions of the evaluations, which are the only ones worth looking at, numerical values 4.7, 4.8, 4.9, something good's going on in the classroom. I don't know what it is, but something good's going on. Students respond well to that. I did something very, very sophisticated. I'm having my seminar do the evaluations this week. So last night I had my seminar students over for dinner. You know, something good's going on in that seminar. It doesn't tell you anything about what's going on in the class. If the evaluations are twos or low threes, that tells you something's going on in the class too. Okay. I will talk to you about professors. I will not talk to you when a podcast is run. Anybody wants to talk to me about professors, I will give you advice. I have opinions. But my opinions are not going to be broadcast to the world. Most, and I believe this very strongly, I think our school has a great teaching faculty. The number of very fine teachers at this school is very high. The number of teachers who are not fine is positive. It's more than zero. If you're taking courses, make decisions to avoid teachers who are going to be problematic for you. And what's problematic for one student won't be problematic for another. Okay? So those are choices. Look at the online evaluation of teaching. They're available on my WCL under the evaluations someplace. They're also available on the myamerican.edu site for academics. They are not coordinated. The more recent ones for some people are on the MyWCL site on their evaluations. The older ones, but it might be a year old and going backwards in time, are available in the myamerican.edu. Look at them. It's additional information. Courses. Business law is, as David said, an umbrella. There are probably at least 10 what you'd call legal disciplines within that umbrella. What most people, when they talk about law firms, they talk about corporate law firms. The corporate law firms have many different practice areas. And governmental agencies do many of the same things. If you do business associations, it's the entry course to all the other corporate courses. It's a very foundational course. If you also want to be legal counsel to an NGO, particularly a domestic NGO, nonprofit, you should take business associations. Because you'll have to deal with legal questions concerning corporate governance, corporate responsibility. And you're introduced to an incredibly important legal concept called fiduciary obligations. And every lawyer should understand that. I tell my students who want to be public interest lawyers, they absolutely have to take business associations. Again, do they have to take it first semester, second year? Not necessarily. But within these areas, you have commercial, which includes secure transactions, creditors' rights, and bankruptcy. I think every student, whether they want to do transactional work or litigation, should have some exposure to the secure transaction / creditors' rights area. I think it should be required. Just because, and again, I have no original thoughts. My wife is a litigator. She faints at the sight of numbers, or she did until she started to work at a bank regulatory agency. She's had to deal with numbers since then. She had to deal with creditors' rights cases all the time in litigation. You have to understand what happens when a transaction goes bad. That's if you're planning the transaction or you're litigating about the transaction. Do you take that right away? No. But somewhere along the way you should think about that. Tax, well, everybody knows it's the most fun stuff in the curriculum. It is, I say, without a lot of concern about being truthful. I'm never concerned about being truthful. But I think tax probably has the highest ratio of how much I enjoyed the course compared to how much I expected to enjoy the course. We benefit from a low second number, so it's easy to get a high ratio. But it is a more interesting subject matter. Again, somewhere along the line, hopefully not before, you know, not too late, take the basic tax course. Federal personal income tax is a misnomer. It's the basic way tax law governs us as people. In general, General Electric doesn't pay any taxes, so that's a different problem. But the big business entities as well. Antitrust regulation is a major concern, but it's more of an economic concern. It's a specialty area in business regulation. Some people absolutely love it. Particularly if you have something of an economic interest in it, Ben. Some people say, not for me. That's okay. Financial institutions, I don't know why, in the last 3-4 years, people have viewed financial institutions and banking as more important than they used to. Maybe because they almost brought the economy down.
Almost.
Yeah, almost. But for the government intervening, it would have. And of course, that was a good thing to do because the government made a profit on that. Employment and labor relations. most businesses have to deal with employees. We as a law school are a business. We need to figure out how to deal with our employees. We have lawyers who deal with that. This is another area of business law. Again, these are areas that may be of more interest to you or less interest to you. Employment law is divided into two areas. One is the traditional law that governs relationships between management and labor unions. That's become of less importance as labor unions have contracted in size and significance in the economy. The employment relationship is the more general approach to employment rights in our society. Very important, very interesting. Anything else on intellectual property? I don't know what David's experience was. When I was in law school, there was Calum. One intellectual property course. And people thought that was an indulgence to even take that one. We have what looks like about 14 or 15 IP courses. In the United States, we don't make stuff like we used to anymore. We create IP, we create intangibles, our big industry, technology, movies. This is important, but the business of the United States is increasingly in IP, pharmaceuticals. What's valuable about pharmaceuticals is the IP rights that are inherent in it. Real estate, that's always been a major industry in the United States. The legal relationships that exist and the constraints under which developers, real estate transactions have to deal with, whether it's finance, zoning, the organizational structure in which businesses operate, that's covered by real estate. We have a bunch of courses in there. Then you have what this thing calls regulated industries. That's a traditional catch-all. But there are particular industries that are governed by traditional regulatory structures. Communications, the federal communications governs what used to be telephone and mass media, television and radio. Well, there's also cable and internet. What is it? How does it apply there? In six different ways, this little device is governed by regulation. How should it be regulated? Should the was it AT&T and Sprint? Should they be allowed to merge? What will effect would that have on us? It's governed by a regulated industry. Energy is another regulated industry. Who's going to govern? What standards should govern things like next generation of nuclear power plants? Should there be a next generation of nuclear power plants? What do you do about oil drilling in the Gulf? You want to have another, well, nobody wants another BP disaster. What do you do to constrain that? Or do you just feel that the existing rules govern? These are where those rules are governed. Healthcare, when I was in law school, we didn't have any health law in our curriculum. Somewhere in our curriculum, we have pushing 8, 10, 12 health law courses. It's a growing area of the economy. It's an important area of the economy. Last year we hired just a wonderful new faculty member, Lindsay Wiley, who teaches in the area, is a prominent area of teaching. She's wonderful. And then there are dispute-oriented things. What this tells you is there are some areas you probably should expose yourself to things like corporate creditors' rights, maybe tax. I'm biased in that area. And other areas that, depending on your interest, see if that excites you. As you go along, you'll find out very quickly, this stuff doesn't appeal to me at all. I want to never see this again. That's fine. And other stuff you'll say, this way of looking at law works for the way my brain works. One reason some people like tax is it's very code-oriented. It's an extensive body of statute where you have to struggle with, the cases are of less importance because the statute is so small. People respond well to statutory courses. There are a bunch of statutory areas of the law. Tax, bankruptcy, trade, immigration. They're very different substantive areas of the law, but the way the law governs them is similar. You learn these things. My one big advice to you is figure out, I don't think you would disagree with this, because we talked about this, figure out what you want to do next semester. And after next semester, figure out what you've learned, and then change where you want to go after for the following semester. You don't have to come up with a four-semester plan that you're really set on. But figure out, as you go along, what adjustments to make in terms of where you're going in terms of your law school development. Anything else I should have said?
Sounds good to me.
Okay. At this point,
Let me add a couple things that occurred to me that I either didn't emphasize or, well, let me just say. There are, the clinic opportunities can be really good, and I don't want you to think just because you're interested in business law that there are no clinical opportunities. For one thing, there's a tax clinic. There's a community economic development law clinic. That's us. Professor Bennett wrote that piece on the website, which is a really useful piece to take a look at. And you know, that helps you think about clinics. I'm not saying you have to do clinics, but you know, clinics are very good here. You know, we only talk about the rankings when they're good for us, but the rankings are really good for us there. We have like the number one or number two clinic in the universe. So it's a great opportunity. There are opportunities related to business there. I'm not saying you have to do that, but that's something not to forget about, and Professor Bennett's piece might be able to help you think about that. I deal with it a little bit in my piece, but I'm trying to do a lot of other stuff. To emphasize something that Professor Pike said, take good professors. And it is really useful if you can talk to some other professors who can tell you, like Professor Pike said he would, what to do in that regard. The evaluations are there. The other thing that's there for you that's really good and is not hard, and don't be shy, talk to upperclassmen. I think they're the best source on which professors are good or not. You can get a piece of it from the evaluations, but if you know some upperclassmen, talk to them. If you don't know some upperclassmen, just go find some. You know, this is something they all know about, and you can get a lot of wisdom that way. And there is this feeling sometimes like, okay, well, by now I should know what I want to do. I've had a whole year of law school. Well, if you don't know, join the club. There are a lot of people out there pretending like they know. Some people think they know, but they're going to turn out to be wrong. Like Professor Pike said, you know, just do it one semester at a time. And you're not going to learn everything from law school either. You can take something in law school and discover that practicing in that area is different from learning about it in law school. So it's hard to know. You have to take your best guess, and I'm not telling you that there aren't times to pretend. There are certain, you know, sometimes you have to sort of take your best guess and say, well, you know, I think I'm interested in this, but you know, I got to keep an open mind, and sometimes that's the best you can do. So those were the things I wanted to add. And why don't we have questions?
Is there an accounting firm lawyer?
Yes.
And is there more than one, or is there just like an entry?
Would
just be a basic.
What's your goal?
I don't know.
Do you
but
have an accounting
background?
I
think I don't, and I feel like I'd like
to. One thing you could do, the accounting for lawyers, you know, let's see. I know Ken Anderson, his corporate finance, starts out with a little bit of accounting. The accounting for lawyers probably is more about how to use accounting and accounting principles and how it interplays with law. One thing you can do, as a law student, you're allowed to take a couple of courses up the main campus, and use at least 6 credits go towards, was it the 86 you're required for to graduate? So if you think you need a little bit of accounting background, you can take the first accounting course, graduate accounting course, which is for people that frequently know accounting, at the business school. If you want the technical accounting, if that's what you feel you need, is do it up there, get the credits. It doesn't cost you anything, and it transfers over just fine.
Doesn't cost you anything extra.
And then there's also the accounting for lawyers course, which we have here. And you know, both. I think you're absolutely right. When I talk to alumni and practicing lawyers, I say, you know, what advice? I keep on asking them to write up some advice for me to put up on the website, and they keep on, you know, they'll talk to you forever at a cocktail party, but getting them to write it down is impossible. So, right, I don't have it up there yet. Eventually, I'll have some. But I'd say the thing I hear absolutely most is tell them they have to understand accounting. And my dad, who was a business lawyer, gave me this whole speech starting in 7th grade that goes, accounting is the language of business. You cannot understand business any more than you could understand anything else if you didn't speak the language. Okay, you can get the idea. And so I did what Professor Pike said, and I took an accounting course. And that worked fine, and the main purpose was to get my dad to calm down, and it was kind of useful. It does tend to be, depending on what you take, it does tend to be geared towards people who may actually be accountants or, you know, planning to become accountants and so on, whereas lawyers aren't planning to be accountants. They need to be able to deal with financial statements. So some accounting for lawyers courses really are more keyed to that. Some accounting for lawyers courses are more keyed to the legal issues surrounding accounting, which have to do with disclosures and stuff like that. And that those are the things we get more of in the accounting for lawyers class here. We may add another accounting for lawyers class, but that's not going to happen next year, I don't think, and probably not while you're here.
Do you have any recommendation as to how to break up the courses that you did recommend as far as secure transactions, tax, and EA? Would you recommend taking them all in one semester, or don't do that?
So some of this is in black and white in my handout, my virtual handout. I think what I said, I would take BA, if you really think you might be interested in business law, I'd take BA right away. So that means either, some people take it over the summer, depending on how their summer is shaping up. Some people take it in the fall. I think that's really wise because that is a prerequisite for a lot of other stuff, including stuff that is not all that advanced. It's a prerequisite for things that are still fairly basic. So I would take BA right away. Tax, I don't think you have to take right away. But you might think about it. I think one of the things about tax is because it turns out weirdly that there's this fair chance that you're going to fall in love with it, it's better to figure out that out sooner rather than later, because then you can still have time to take the advanced tax courses and do more stuff with it. But that's less pressing than BA. Secure transactions, I also think, less pressing than BA. I would try to take those in your second year. But at the end of my handout, I have some general pieces of advice, one of which is don't take too many big, fat, scary courses all at once. And you need to, again, I think talking to upperclassmen is a good thing to do if you want to figure out what the big, fat, scary courses are. I think it's a fair bet that evidence is one of them. I feel certain tax is one of them. It is at least scary.
It's scary.
They'll fall in love with it later. All right. How many credits is it?
Four.
I thought so. All right. So like I was saying,
and that's a fact. I mean, lead in to what I was going to say. One of the dirty secrets of academia is when somebody teaches a two-credit course, it's often because they don't want to have two meetings during the week and to get away with one. But they really want to cover 3 credits of material. So two-credit courses is about equivalent to a 5-credit course.
5 or 6, yeah.
Okay.
Surely they all have figured this out. 2-credit courses are a jip in terms of credits. You'll do
but
more work than 2 credits.
If you're trying to figure out what's burdensome, I can guarantee you taking tax is a whole lot less work than 2 2-credit courses.
I agree with that. I gotta go on.
So if you take 2 4-credit courses, that's 8 credits. If you're taking 2 threes and a 2, I don't know if it's less work or not. I don't know if it's more work. It may be scarier. I don't know if it's less work. Yeah, it's probably going to be more work than a 2-credit course. It may be a little more work than a 3, but it might not be, depending on the 3-credit course. I'll also say this, and here I have a very strong bias. You hear reputations of professors. When David mentions business associations, one of my favorite teachers on the faculty, Mary Siegel, teaches BA. Sometimes people are scared of her because she has a reputation of being tough because her exams are hard. One nice thing about a hard exam is they're hard for everybody. If they're hard for everybody, they're fair for everybody. If you look at her evaluations, they are, I wish I had evaluations as good as hers. She's a wonderful teacher. If I were taking BA, I would definitely. The others are good. She's just good.
If someone has an interest in potentially practicing law abroad under this very general banner of international law, do you think it's important to take any of the international business-related classes, or are you really just going to be hired because you know American law and that's what these people want?
Oh, God. Don't you hate it when professor says, depends. You just want to work internationally, that's your passion. Do you have any particularly uniquely internationally related skills?
No.
Most people, when they're hired in an international place, if it's an NGO, it's because somebody has a lifelong passion in something the NGO is doing, where they've maneuvered themselves into the NGO in some sort of intern position, proved themselves, and somehow was able to maneuver into a permanent position. But in the private law area, knowing American law generally, I don't think is what they're looking for. They're looking for somebody who has knowledge about certain areas that are helpful in cross-border transactions. Might be trade, might be antitrust, might be securities law. If I were picking 3 areas, might be secure transactions. I know some of my former students did hedge funds in London. That's when hedge funds were hot. I'm not sure they're still hiring.
You're hiring bankruptcy lawyers. It's too big a question to give you a good answer to, I think. So the good news is there are lots of ways you can go with it. But part of the first piece is getting your foot in the door. And so that, you know, it sort of depends on where you want to go. If you want to go work at Fried, Frank, and Paris, there are a lot of people who would like to go work at Fried, Frank, and Paris, and so you need to show them why you're the right person to go do that. If you want to go, well, so I hear all kind of interesting stuff is going on in Bogota. And I was hearing at lunch some really interesting stuff about it. And I don't know, maybe that's very competitive too. I know less about it. I'm kind of assuming it's less so. And so it depends. I think you have to be more specific in where you want to go. But you do have to think about, how do I get hired? What is my value? And why are they hiring an American lawyer? I will say that I did a fair amount of international work. That happened in the first instance utterly by accident. But I think the reason I wound up staying with the client as long as I did was I had a lot of background in their law as well as ours. Now, they weren't hiring me to advise them on their law. They were French lawyers. They knew about their law, and they had French law firms. But I could understand where they were coming from, and that was really helpful. And they liked that. So that's just one example. A lot of the transactional stuff tends to be about international transactions, and there are laws that, you know, if you know them already, that's a big help. I'm not saying they'll hire you just because you know them, but that is a big help. If you're going to a firm that does project finance, if you know all about foreign direct investment already, that's a big help. It also shows them that you're committed to it, so that's another piece of getting your foot in the door. You're sending the right signal, aside from whether they're really going to use your knowledge of that piece of law.
Sometimes it's just blind luck. And it's hard to plan for blind luck.
Yeah, well, and at first you don't necessarily know whether it's good luck or bad luck. You have to wait a while to find out.
When my daughter spent a month working for the War Crimes Tribunal for Rwanda, and she did this because she happened to be a tax associate in the Washington office of a New York firm that sent people on rotations for a month to 6 weeks to the War Crimes Tribunal for Rwanda as one of their public service activities. And she was getting ready to leave, and she said, "I'm leaving. I'd love to do this. You've made me miserable for three." She didn't say that. "I've worked real hard for 3 years. I'd love to do this." She said, "I never could because I have too much on my plate. Now my plate's getting cleaned off. Can I go?" That's totally random. And she might have been able to parlay that into something more permanent. It's weird.
Another question?
Yeah. I'd like to know more about seminars and how, I understand there are a lot of business law-oriented seminars, and when would be the best time to take it? Like, for example, would next semester be too early?
It's unconventional to take it then. The thing about seminars is you get to write, and the more you get to write, the better. I thoroughly believe the most important skill for pretty much any lawyer is writing. So that's really good. Sometimes the seminars tend to be in fairly advanced subjects, and the culture here, if nobody's clued you into this yet, is not to have prerequisites for courses. It's rarely done. So there are, as I mentioned, there are some courses that have prerequisites, like you have to have BA, or you have to have securities regulation, and you have to have basic tax. But that's rare. We ought to have prerequisites a lot more than we do. So it will often be the case, I'm not saying you won't do okay in the course, but it will often be the case, especially in a seminar, that you might get a lot more out of it if you had the basic courses first, even though they don't tell you it's required, and they may not even tell you it's recommended.
Okay. David's right, but he made an assumption that was not always valid. Some seminars are not writing seminars. Okay? So you want to see if the subject matter of the seminar is one where you're really not prepared for it because you don't have the background in courses. If the seminar is not one of them and all it is just a limited enrollment thing that anybody's prepared for, you're in fine shape. In fact, second years tend to work a little bit harder than third years. So you might be in better shape.
Better school work anyway.
I'm not going there. I have no idea what you're talking about. Anyway, so that would be fine. Otherwise, you might want to put it on. You also, if your purpose of that is to do some writing, you want to make sure that there's a writing element to it, as opposed to just being in a limited enrollment course.
I heard from upper level students that the white collar con seminar filled up really fast.
Always does.
Any chance there will be more sections in the future?
So not for second years. If they did, there'd be more.
No, I meant like, because I know 3Ls and 4Ls that are on the waiting list.
That's so right. It's a crapshoot. I think we've had, I'm not in the academic dean business anymore. I'm very happy not to be.
But he was for 10 years, so he knows.
At times we had one a semester, but it depends on if we happen to have some adjuncts who would really do a good job teaching it. It's not something our full-time faculty really has a special interest and experience to do. It's a specialty for the law course. Unfortunately, the person who teaches it is somebody who limits the involvement significantly.
Yeah. Are there any practical skills courses that you would emphasize being taken? Should be.
I think those courses can be fun. And it's like you're doing it for real. And we have some really good ones, and we have some especially interesting ones. So one example is the one where I think it's law students and business students who here and in Scotland who negotiate and document an international transaction. So it's got to be set up, and you're talking to these people in Scotland. First, you got to figure out how to understand them because they claim to speak English. And so that's, it's just really fun. And there are a few of those. There are not a lot. I can tell you it's one of the areas we're trying to develop more courses. So that's one side of it. The flip side of it is, and this was a thought actually given to me by someone who's a long-time practicing lawyer, and I was talking to him about, should I take some of these courses, should I do a clinic, and so on. And he answered with a question. He said, do you like law school? And I said, you can tell me. I know everybody has to say they hate law school, but tell me. And I told him, actually, I do kind of like law school. He said, well, then don't do those courses. This is your last chance to do academic work in law, and you learn things in a really systematic way and so on, and you will spend the rest of your life doing these other things, and I think you'll enjoy them, but you've got a long time to do them. So that's what he said to me. So I pass that on for the counterweight.
I'll add one more practical course. First, do you want to do litigation?
Maybe.
Okay. If you want to do litigation, you should do some litigation skills stuff. It might be in a clinic, it might be in pre-trial litigation or trial practice. That's a different set of questions, and it's not quite as general. If you think you want to do sort of transactional business advising work, another course I think that's valuable, something called Business Planning by a guy named Norman Ewell.
E-U-L-E.
this course for people who've taken business association basic tax. He's a transactional lawyer, and basically you're required to basically form teams and create a business plan in response to a problem that real clients have come up with.
He tries to do that as much as he can as a sort of capstone course, so that's more a 3L kind of course after you've had some of the other stuff.
I think real estate transactions is another one that's designed to be sort of skills and law. It's not skills in the way the trial practices, get up on your feet, do what lawyers do. See, anybody seeing what you do would know it's a skills course, but it's the transactional skills that might be good for
them.
Is there a class that deals particularly with the Sarbanes-Oxley Act?
Business associations will have aspects of Sarbanes-Oxley. Securities law will have aspects of Sarbanes-Oxley. So it's to the extent that they become significant elements, it would be built into the general landscape of those.
Yeah, you'll get some in both of those, and then you will probably, there are advanced courses that will probably deal with them. My guess is the corporate governance probably does. I wouldn't swear to that. By the way, corporate governance, so a heads up, corporate governance and which is a big deal these days. Let me replace that. Corporate governance, about which there is a great deal of talk these days. How much governing is going on is open to question. Is offered typically every other year. That means that if you see it on the schedule and you want to take it, you got to take it when you see it. The same is true of what is probably called something like corporate reorganizations. It may be called reorganizations or corporate bankruptcy or something like that. By the way, when Professor Pike says creditors' rights, that's a law school way of saying, or lawyer's way of saying, bankruptcy. Those two courses, which are big these days, heads up, those are offered every other year. The same person teaches them and he goes back and forth. So if you're interested in those, you can take those. Anyway, corporate governance, I suspect, does some Sarbanes-Oxley. And then there is an advanced course in securities regulation, which is, we have a couple of courses like this, both a corporate one and a securities one, that essentially is hot topics in those areas of law. So it sort of depends on what the person who's teaching it thinks. Okay, these are the hottest topics now. And so it hasn't, I think, included some Sarbanes-Oxley in the past. That may get pushed out of the way with Dodd-Frank and some other stuff. Any other questions?
Yeah. Are there any classes at the business school that have been more popular with law students that you see? Or is there anything that you recommend that might be a good background course to get?
My sense is that the business-oriented part of our curriculum, the business associations class, the tax class, secure transactions class, the international trade class, a lot of these basic courses I know, corporate finance class. These are courses that talk about major areas of business practice. Most often those students who don't know diddly squat about the area, so you have to, when you're teaching it, provide some background into it. So, and it provides some of the background so you, by the time you're finished, you have had some of the background integrated into it. So nothing comes to mind in terms of the business school courses. Unless it's something very specific, what I hear about the business school courses is they're very, very sort of specific. They're not teaching you to reason. It's here's what you should know. And it's the feedback I get is it's not as challenging as the law school courses. But if there's some particular stuff that you feel like you're short on, could be some international stuff or some finance stuff, which we're not going to be as quantitative on as they will be. That's something you might want to consider. But if it's just to get background, take the courses here, you'll be fine.
Other questions?
Yes.
Do you have the
course
for the this might also be in your piece, but outside, since the business program is more of an umbrella, outside of evidence, are there any other courses outside of the business realm that you recommend that we take if we want to stay on this sort of business track?
For me, evidence is the only thing I would say that most, if not all, law students should have exposure to. Everything, you know, the required courses have already happened. You know, it's good to know what the Fifth Amendment means, because then you can watch Law and Order and people can say, hey, you're the lawyer, is that right? And the answer, yeah, they know what they're talking about. Depending on what you're interested in, there may be other courses that make sense for you, but it's not a general, even though you're going in this direction, here's something else that everybody should have. It's more of a, given the sort of things you're interested in, this is something else that I would add on to your particular hodgepodge of courses. So it's an individualized sort of bit of advice.
Yeah, I've been sitting here trying to think, is there something that everybody has to take other than the things we've already talked about? I can't think of anything. One thing I do say in my, like, four pieces of general advice at the end is I think each semester or almost every semester you should take a course that you really want to take, whether it fits in with what you think you want to do, what you think you should be doing, what your father thinks you should be doing, or whatever. And whatever that is, you need to give yourself permission to take a course like that, and that may change your mind about some things. It is, you know, as I've found about studying law so far, you get a really deep understanding of some basic social issues, right? That's what law does, is it has to deal with social issues one way or another. And so there are things, depending on your interests, that you might decide, I really ought to know that. So, you know, one thing that I never took that I kind of wish I had, because it seems to come up all the time, it's not like anybody asked me for advice or anything, it's just I wish I had a better way of thinking about family law issues. You know, there's so much interesting stuff going on that I just sort of feel like as a citizen, I wish I'd had the real law school, I wish I really knew. Basically, you know, I don't know anything more than whoever's like a fresh market. They probably know more about it. But, you know, that's just I'm trying to make concrete what Professor Pike already said.